Good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, pleased to welcome you to one of my favorite activities, which is hosting our monthly book program, All Sides Weekend / Books. And I'm pleased to welcome a new member to our panel today, author Lee Martin, whose new novel is called Break the Skin, and it is a page-turner. Don't miss that. He is also the author of several other novels and a couple of wonderful memoirs. And happily for us, Lee Martin's a neighbor. He's on the faculty of The Ohio State University. Welcome.
Thanks very much, Christopher.
Also with us, book blogger, book genius, teacher, writer, freelance star, Bill Eichenberger, who's now writing for the Cleveland Plain Dealer.
That's right, and the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
And the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, yeah. When you're not working on your blog, thebooksurf.com. Thank you. Good to have you
Good
back
morning.
With us. And the always sensational Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, is here. And Bill and Cassie both have stacks of books with them, which is always intriguing. And at my request, Lee Martin brought along a copy of his own novel because I have asked him to give us a couple of readings as time goes on. But I want, as by way of introduction to our audience, Lee, you were telling us a very intriguing story about how your taste in literature, as it were, grew when you were a young boy, and your experience with a small-town library. I wonder if you'd care to expound on that.
Sure. I grew up in a very small town in southeastern Illinois of about 1,000 people, and at one point we had a very small library. And I think I was 16 years old, and I went up to the library one day, and I chose Valley of the Dolls as the book that I would like to read. And the librarian took one look at the book and one look at me and said, "Does your mother know you're reading this?" And I told her the truth, which was that my mother didn't police my reading and that I was free to read whatever I liked. And after a moment of deliberation, the librarian did let me check out the book. But I could tell from her look that she thought much less of me and my mother at that point.
I doubt, though, that the idea of becoming a writer yourself was fostered by reading Valley of the Dolls. But not that it wasn't a huge success at the time. But.
No, my idea of becoming a writer was fostered by the Bobbsey Twins mystery series.
Even better. More of us relate to that. That's hopefully these days, please God. Cassie Rose, I want to start with you because I always love the stacks you bring with us. And I see you have Lee Martin's current novel, Breaking the Skin, and a few other things. So what's new? What's hot? What's interesting?
Well, one book that has come out this summer that I've enjoyed very much, it's called Nom de Plume by Carmela Chiraru, I think is her name. I had to go to her publicist to find out how to pronounce that. It's sort of like Chihuahua. Anyway, it's a collection of essays about authors who wrote under pseudonyms. And, you know, that sounds kind of plain, but it's, I think it's sort of a highbrow literary People magazine kind of a read because the details are extraordinary, the people are eccentrics, so it's all why they made the choice to publish under a pseudonym. Like George Eliot, who was Marian Evans, and she was living openly with a married man in the 19th century, and she was writing controversial novels before she wrote The Mill of the Floss and Middlemarch, and so she chose George Eliot. And also George Orwell. I didn't know that was a pseudonym for Eric Blair. And Patricia Highsmith, one of the first books that she published under pseudonym, which Patricia Highsmith is her real name, it was very self-revealing. So she published that under a pseudonym. And the author is, she's very entertaining because she adds her comment. She's witty. She's very accessible. She makes the people jump off the page. She writes about how they made the choices because they were either there was a gender issue involved or maybe they were writing something erotic like Pauline Réage, who wrote The Story of O. And what's fascinating about that is that she wrote that to keep her boyfriend. She had no intention to write it as a book that she was going to publish, and her boyfriend read it and said, you know, you should get this published. She was getting older in age. She was in her 40s, and she thought he was going to leave her.
Do we know if he hung around? Did it work?
He did.
Oh, well.
It worked.
There's a moral of that story somewhere.
Right.
When in doubt, write.
Right, yeah.
And Bill Eichenberger, what'd you bring us, and how have you been, and talk to us.
Good. I was wondering if I can ask Cassie a question.
Please
and that
do.
Is that,
no.
Does she talk about why they chose the names they chose, or simply that why they chose to have a pseudonym.
No, she does. She does explain why. For example, I think Lewis Carroll made the choice because it was a derivative of his name in mm-hmm. Latin. He was Charles Ludwig Dodson. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman named Alice Sheldon. She published under James Tiptree. She was a science fiction novelist and needed to have a man's name. And Tiptree was on a jam jar in the grocery. Mm-hmm. So that's how she chose that one.
And then I'm reading, or just finished reading, the autobiography of Mrs. Tom Thumb, a novel by Melanie Benjamin. She also wrote Alice, I Have Been, which it was historical fiction about Alice in Wonderland, the little girl mm-hmm. who was modeled after Alice in Wonderland. And Mrs. Tom Thumb was a New Englander. Christopher.
Yes. All right.
Whose name was Vinnie Warren Bump, although she dropped the bump when she took up with P.T. Barnum. But she married Tom Thumb, General Tom Thumb, and toured with Barnum and was an exhibit or what would you say? She a performer, I guess.
An attraction
at the American Museum in New York City. 32 inches tall. In this telling, she's a real 32-inch firebrand with, as I said in my review, that she makes up with her savage wit what she lacks in stature. People think she's a child until the words come out of her mouth. And she was actually a New England schoolmarm. And, boy, she puts them in their place very quickly. So it's very interesting. She turns it into a love story between Vinnie and, of all people, P.T. Barnum. That's the platonic love affair and the unrequited love that really kind of drives the – she doesn't care much for General Tom Thumb, and she – and she's too small. She knows that she has proportionate dwarfism. So she's, as P.T. Barnum calls her, a perfect woman in miniature. They were not interested in little people who were disproportionate. That was in during the 19th century. But these little people who were perfectly proportionate became sort of the show people for P.T. Barnum. So it's just a really interesting historical novel. She just a lot of good period detail, but not weighed down with it. So,
give us the title and author again.
It's the autobiography of Mrs. Tom Thumb, and it's Melanie Benjamin.
Now that would be probably Civil War era America.
Absolutely,
right.
It starts in. She joins with P.T. Barnum in 1962. They had really what Benjamin describes in her author's note as kind of the equivalent wedding between Princess Di and Charles. It was that renowned. It was that commented on. In fact, it took up the front page of the New York Times in the middle of the Civil War. So it had to have captured the imagination of the entire country.
Does she grip you with a sense of place being Civil War America? Is she convincing that way?
You know, it's really a love story out of place and time. I mean, she does. In fact, a lot of times she traveled across the country on the Transcontinental Railroad. She went to Australia. She was one of the first folks to visit Australia, but not so much. She glosses over that in a couple of pages, and then she really concentrates on the words and the thoughts and the love affair between these two people.
Whenever we do this program and my guests begin to give titles of books, I'm frantically writing things down, which is not a good idea when you're in the studio. But all of these titles and authors will be on our website for anyone to check out. So listen, hang tight, and get ready to call us. We'd love to hear from you. 292-8513 is the phone number. Tell us what you're reading. Tell us if you have any recommendations. Ask questions of our panel. 292-8513. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org, and you can find us on Facebook. And speaking of place, Lee Martin, I know Southeastern Illinois is very important to you. First of all, you're from there, and it seems to be an actual character in many of your books.
Right. I grew up there, except for 6 years that I spent in the suburbs of Chicago because my mother was a teacher and had taken a teaching position in Oak Forest, Illinois. But I'm really interested in the Midwest, my native southeastern Illinois in particular. I do think of that landscape as character in my work. And I keep remembering what Eudora Welty said about place being fiction and how culture creates character and event.
If you were to transfer your characters to another physical place, would they be the same book?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. I think that the Midwestern landscape, at least in my own work and in the work of other Midwestern authors, really forms the characters and the situations that they find themselves in.
One thing that I really liked in the work of yours that I have read is that you have a great deal of interest and compassion for your male characters, which is sometimes not true. But Break the Skin is about women, two of whom who live don't know each other. They live far apart, and they become subsumed with the same tragedy with one man as their connector. And I wonder if you'd care to read for us. I've asked, full disclosure, I asked Professor Martin to read for us from his new novel, Break the Skin.
I'll read just a little bit from the very opening of the book, which is in the first-person point of view of a young girl named Lainey, who lives in a small town in southeastern Illinois. The other narrator in the book is a woman, Betty Ruiz, who goes by the nickname of Miss Baby because she owns a tattoo parlor named Baby Hearts Tats. And she lives in Texas, Denton, Texas. I was really curious in writing this book of trying to figure out how two separate narrators, geographically separated, could narrate a novel that would eventually weave together their two stories. So this is just a little bit from the opening in Lainey's point of view. The police came for me in the middle of the night. Two officers, one tall and slope-shouldered, the other big-bellied. They walked into the Walmart where I worked, and after speaking to the shift supervisor, they came to my register, and the tall one said, "You're Elaine Vogue, aren't you? We asked you a few questions once before, remember?" Of course I remembered. Questions about where I was on a certain morning in May. Home asleep, I'd told them. And, no, I didn't hear any shots. Now, a few customers who had been about to push their carts to my checkout line were hesitating. I gave them a grin in hopes that they'd think everything was all right, but I knew it wasn't. I said to the officers, "I'm Lainey." My voice sounded strange to me, too loud for my soft-spoken nature. I was the sort most folks didn't give a second look. A scrawny thing with short curly hair, a nothing kind of girl with no hips to speak of and arms and legs as thin as ropes. I looked like I might turn to dust, which is what I wished I could have done just then. I was 19, and as I stood there waiting to see what was going to happen next, I felt how far I was from the girl I'd always been, little Lainey Vogue, as ordinary as bread from the wrapper.
Christopher,
That's a selection from Break the Skin by Lee Martin. He's here with us. And the reason we have to take one little break for 1 minute, I want to get the phone number again, 292-8513, also emailing us at WOSU.org. Look for us on Facebook, All Sides Weekend. We'll be back in 1 minute. I'm Christopher Purdy.
President Obama went on national TV and basically gave up. He said, "Look, Congress won't listen to me. Maybe you guys can talk some sense into them." And the nation responded, flooding the Capitol switchboards and crashing their servers. It worked so well, the president asked citizens to call Michelle and tell her to let him eat a cheeseburger once in a while. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
Checking the weather forecast for Central Ohio, a high today of 92 with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms late this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms of low 72. And then on Saturday, mostly sunny. Tomorrow's high 91 degrees with a slight chance of rain.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Columbus Jazz Orchestra, wrapping up Jazzu's sixth season on Friday, August 12th with Elvis, the Beatles, and Beyond, featuring guitarist Dan Fanley of Pink Martini and Jonathan Elliott of the Floorwalkers. Details at jazzartsgroup.org.
Thank you, Charlie Pickard. We are back. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, our book edition with Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Lee Martin. Lee Martin was just reading a selection from Break the Skin, his new novel, and Cassie Rose had a question.
I did. Christopher, you had said before the reading that Lee had great compassion for his male characters, and these are. I'm halfway through Break the Skin, by the way. And the Miss Baby, who is the other woman that you had mentioned that's the main character in this story, you dedicate the book to her. And could you talk a little bit about why you made that choice?
Well, she was actually the first character who spoke to me in the writing of this book. And so I think the book doesn't exist without her. Mm. As a matter of fact, in the very first draft of the book, her section opened the novel, got rearranged in the revision process. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I owe a lot to her, because I don't think I would have written this book if I hadn't heard her voice.
It's a powerful voice.
Oh,
and
thanks.
And she does grab you. And so when I was reading, I thought, yeah, I saw that you had dedicated to her, and then I get this powerful voice, and I thought, there's something here. She's an incredible character.
Oh, well, thanks very much. I mean, one of my big concerns with the novel was that I wouldn't be convincing in the female voice, so it's really nice to hear you say that.
Yeah, that was another thing, too, I wanted to ask you about. You know, you capture the women very well, and you do have the voices down very well. Not only that, but the emotions of the women, too. And we're talking about romance and how the women think about romance and think about the men, and they're not all the same. You capture the nuances that so is there any secret you have to that? Were you watching and listening to women talk about their heartfelt stories for a while? I mean, where was the research for this?
It's just a lifelong experience of listening and learning.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you do very well.
You have one more selection to read for us from Break the Skin, and I wanted to share that now and then take some calls.
Well, I think I'll read a little bit from close to the end of the novel, but I've promised Cassie that I wouldn't give away too much. So I think about the only thing that I'm going to give away to you, Cassie, is that Lainey eventually finds herself on trial.
Okay.
And this section from the end of the novel, toward the end of the novel, takes place around that time. This is in Miss Baby's voice. Miss Baby's life has run smack dab up against the life of Lainey and her boyfriend Lester and her friend Delilah and another friend, Rose McAdow. And Miss Baby has this to say. "I never meant for anyone to get hurt," Lainey said that day in the courtroom. The story started to come out, stories of how she'd never had a boyfriend until Lester. I heard the people talking in the hallway during recesses. They weren't buying for a minute that nonsense about him forgetting who he was and running away. He knew what he was doing when he went to Texas. He played that Mexican gal for a fool. Well, he'll have a good long while in prison to remember exactly who he is. That Lainey Volk, too. And Delilah Dade? Look what happens when a woman gets mad at a man who did her wrong. Bernard Goad, still wearing his mailman's light blue shirt, watched the deputies lead Lainey back into the courtroom one day. He shook his head. "Women," he said, disgusted. That wasn't it, I wanted to say. Not at all. Just like a man, I thought, to imagine that it all came down to a broken heart and revenge. It was more than that. Much more. When Lainey looked at me from the witness stand, I tried to set my face in a way that I hoped would let her know I understood exactly how it happened. It was all about wanting to matter to someone, wanting it so badly that you did things you never could have imagined, and you swore they were right, all for the sake of love.
Thank you, Lee Martin, and we have one of your readers. I have listeners. You have readers. One of your readers on the line, Wendy's been waiting. Hello, Wendy.
Hello there.
Hi, Wendy. Go ahead.
I just finished Lee Martin's book, and it was indeed a page turner. I happened to run into your wife, Lee, at the grocery store and said, I can't wait to get your husband's book in the mail. She happened to direct me in a play a few years ago. So I was just kind of waiting to read your book because I knew her. And what I want to say about it is, well, kind of what you were just reading, this desperate need of the characters to have some sort of connection. And it's kind of pathetic. It's also very realistic. And sort of like any love is better than no love at all, even if you're abused. And I just, the hopelessness and helplessness that came across to your characters was really just so realistic.
Well, thanks so much, Wendy. And I remember you in that play. You were very good.
Oh, thank you. Yes, indeed.
But, yeah, I really appreciate your comment. And, you know, I'm interested in my work these days in characters who sort of find themselves disconnected, on the fringe, not quite belonging. And that's how I looked at Miss Baby and Lainey in this novel. Women who were just looking for that sense of mattering to somebody.
Mm-hmm. Wendy, thank you very much for your call. We appreciate hearing from you. 292-8513 is the number. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org. Lee Martin, thank you for, you read very beautifully.
Oh, well, thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much for reading for that. We've got a couple of online comments as well that I want to share. Tom in Waverly, Ohio, has emailed us and said that he's reading right now State of Wonder by Ann Patchett. Mm-hmm. It's the first of her books he's ever read, and he's loving it. Mm-hmm. And I think it's on my desk in Galleys, too. I haven't read it myself. Bel Canto was one of her mm-hmm. novels as well that made some. Anybody want to comment on Ann Patchett?
I did not like Bel Canto. I had a bad experience with that because I went hiking in Alaska and it was the one book I had with me.
Oh,
and I did not feel that she captured the it was an opera singer, wasn't it?
It's an opera singer in a shipwreck being held hostage,
hostage
I think.
In hostage South America yeah. somewhere. And I didn't think that the characters were realistic. So that ruined me on Ann Patchett. Reading some of the reviews about her recent release, I think they've been mixed. There have been some that are coming like this listeners saying that they love the book, and some of the critics have highly praised it, and others have come out and said it's not one of her best.
State of Wonder is the title of her latest book. Bill Leichenberger, you have books with the big word Columbus on them, and you have Sugar Ray Leonard, so I'm intrigued.
Well, I brought the wrong book about Columbus because I'm just at the beginning of that one, but I did finish a book by – I guess there's two books about Columbus. This one by Lawrence Bergreen is called The Four Voyages.
Oh, that Columbus.
Yes, okay. Christopher Columbus.
The noun. All right. Yes.
Not the city. But the one I did finish already is a book by Charles Mann that comes out in August called 1493. And it's about what happened when East met West, North met South, when he describes it as the homogenocene. And what he means by that is when the entire planet began to become homogenous. And all the things that happened. I mean, I think the image we have of Columbus handed down to us is of someone who brought kind of smallpox to the new world. And while that did happen, he's talking about the exchanges where everything came from. That there were no rubber trees anywhere in the world except for South America until they were exported to Asia and Southeast Asia and to other places. And how one of the reasons that the slave trade that plantation slavery happened was that that Africans were they were immune to yellow fever and to what was the other big disease?
Tuberculosis?
The
plague? The bubonic plague?
No, it wasn't.
Something
good
terrible.
Good guesses, though. Something terrible. I should.
Typhoid?
Typhoid.
I'm going to start doing like charade signals and yellow fever and one other disease, one other illness that they were mosquitoes, precariat.
Malaria. Okay.
Malaria, of course. Duh. So in any case, they were immune to it, and so at one point there were. 10-to-1 Africans on the continent, the North American continent, as there were Europeans, because all the Europeans came over and died in horrific numbers. And so, so what you'd have are these plantation owners staying in Europe, sending these poor European overseers to the plantations, and then having Africans who are immune working the plantations. So, but he's talking about all the ways in the world how things were how we got potatoes and how you know, because potatoes were specific also to South America. And so all over the place, the exchanges that were made and how in the end he says that these exchanges were the scale of pluses versus negatives were very close. There were a lot of negatives, but that overall the positives of this exchange outweighed the negatives.
It sounds like a great read. It's not yet been published. Is
no,
right?
It comes out the first week of August.
And the title is?
Is 1493 by Charles Mann.
That's kind of easy to remember, 1493.
Yeah. Just
add one and you're all good. I have to ask you, Cassie Rose, what is pigeon, as in bird, English?
Oh, this is a debut novel that was published, I think, last week, just came out last week. And this week it came out on the long list for the Man Booker Prize, so which is kind of interesting. This guy's first novel, and the story behind it is I think he was a government worker in London or around and got laid off and sat down and wrote this book, which is written in the voice of a small boy from Ghana living in what we would say would be the projects of London with his mother and his sister. So it's his language. It's his thoughts. It's very linguistically rich because you get his dialect and his hood language too. And there's a murder in the beginning. One of the boys in the hood gets murdered. But again, he's a little boy. He's under 10 years old, I think. But and he's trying to take all of this in. And what the main focus isn't the murder, though. It's more about his life with his mom and then with his friends, and he's interpreting sort of everything for us. So we see his life, and then we find things like he's follows his sister to the laundromat, and she loads a load of bloody clothes into the laundromat. And then there's, you know, some connection with some gang members on the street, and they start teasing him. And then there's some connection with his sister's friend. And so you're seeing that it's through his eyes. So it's not a 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 in connecting about the murder mystery. It's more of this fragmented little boy's vision of it with his language and living in the richness of this tower that is what we would call the project. And the pigeon part of the English is that he feeds the pigeons on the ledges of his house. And every once in a while, this author in italics will include the thoughts of the pigeon. And that was a shock to me at first. I thought, seriously, is this sort of a, you know, device that he's using? But it's really neat because the pigeon is sort of watching over him. And so he's able then to give us some viewpoint of what's going on overall in this neighborhood.
Give me the title and author again.
It's called Pigeon English, and it's by Stephen Kelman.
Okay, you don't have to remember that too, because remember, it's going to be on our website, wosu.org/allsidesweekend. We'll have everything that we're talking about today listed for your viewing and hopefully reading pleasure. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. My guests, Cassie Rose, WOSU's book critic, Bill Eichenberger, who is everybody in the world's book critic, and Lee Martin, the author of the new novel, Break the Skin, who has just been reading for us. He also wrote a number of other books and a wonderful memoir, one of my favorites in a while, called From Our House. So it's good to have you here, as always. We've got several recommendations. People are using our Facebook page, and people are emailing with their recommendations. And we want to know what you're reading now, 292-8513, what you really enjoyed or didn't enjoy. Call us and talk to us about it. Laurie Moore, A Gate at the Stairs, mm-hmm. is a recommendation from Stephen mm-hmm. on Facebook. Was she not faculty here, Laurie Moore? Am I thinking of somebody else?
No, I don't think she ever was.
You gave me an so.
Yeah, that's one of the books that I didn't get to that I wanted to get to. It just sounds really good.
Stephen also recommends Laurie Moore's short stories, mm-hmm. something to look into. And sort of an old friend, because he was here last fall, Michael Ondaatje, who was over at Capital University, thanks to our colleague Kevin Griffith. Eric on Facebook is reading and enjoying The English Patient. He says not a new book, but a great one. And I'm glad to hear about that. We also have Kathy on the phone with a question for Dr. Martin. Forgive me. Hi, Kathy. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Dr. Martin. Enjoyed all of your books and wondering if you can tell us what's on the horizon for you.
Oh, well, hi, Kathy. Thanks for calling in. That's a really great question. I've got a new novel that's in submission right now, a novel called Late One Night, which is another novel set in the Midwest, a small town area, and it's the story of a house trailer fire that tests the allegiances of family in a small community. I hope it's another novel that's suspenseful, but also has a lot to tell us about the accommodations people make in their love relationships and in their familial relationships.
What do you mean by, you said it's in submission now? Do you mean that it is going the rounds of the publishers, or it's been accepted?
It's on my editor's desk.
I see. Okay.
Does an established author like yourself, with several successes to your credit, sort of have to start all over again when you write a new manuscript and it's submitted? I'd like to think that because you are who you are, any successful author, it's automatically snapped up and that's it. They're going to publish it.
Well, you know, part of my contract with Break the Skin gives Crown Publishing the option on my next novel. So they will look at it and decide whether they would like to publish it. And if they decide that, they'll make an offer. And then my agent will take things from there and we'll see. But, you know, in the past, for example, after From Our House and after my novel Quaker Town, two books that really didn't sell that well, even though they were critically well received. Dutton was the publisher. They decided they didn't want to do the next book, which was The Bright Forever. And so, you know, that's the novel that ended up being a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize.
That's the brothers, right?
No, that's
Last Laugh.
Yeah. No, that's the story of the disappearance of the little girl.
That's right. Yeah.
So I was, you know, that novel after Dutton turned it down, probably went to 25 editors before it found the home that it found.
On that semi-happy note, we have to take a break for 1 minute, 30 seconds. We'll be right back. 292-8513. Don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with lyricist Fran Landsman. She co-wrote the song Spring Can Really Hang You Up the Most. She died Saturday. Also, Melissa Phoebos tells us about her 4 years as a dominatrix in Midtown Manhattan before attending grad school for an MFA in writing. Her memoir, Whip Smart, is out in paperback. Join us.
Terry Gross and Fresh Air coming up in just a half an hour at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Don't forget that tonight, On the Record, Columbus on the Record on Channel 34 with our own Mike Thompson as host. It gives you more than just headlines and short sound bites. Watch Columbus on the Record for in-depth, thoughtful, and balanced analysis of the issues and stories affecting Columbus and Central Ohio. It's every Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU TV 34.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Sherrington Group, financial planners and investment managers providing financial advice and client-focused solutions to help grow and preserve clients' wealth. The Sherrington Group, planning for success, managing for life at sherringtongroup.com.
The weather forecast sounds pretty much like a broken record. A high today of 92 with lots of heat and humidity. Actually, it will feel like it's over 100 degrees because of that. Mostly cloudy tonight with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 72. Then on Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 91, slight chance of rain. Saturday night, partly cloudy, and a low of 69 degrees.
I try not to do this, but sometimes our best conversations are when Charlie, God bless him, is doing the news or when we're off mic. But I'm back. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are back on All Sides Weekend with Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Lee Martin. And Cassie, you brought in a book by Donald Ray Pollack, who has been a guest on this program. He is an Ohio author getting a lot of press right now. Mm-hmm. He is the author of the short story collection Knock 'Em Stiff, and his new book is called The Devil All the Time. And I think it's his first novel.
Yes.
I was devastated by it in a good way. Well,
the conversation we were having off mic was that maybe this is a guy book. Because
I didn't want to say that, but because I didn't want to get the mail. But yes, I think that was. I think it's probably a guy book.
Well, I don't know. And as we've said that, I don't know if I've had conversations with other women who have read the book. It's and in my review, I said that it is, you know, beware. It's violent. They're depraved characters. You know, they do gross things, like one guy wipes his face with a dirty diaper. There is, you know, foul language in it. They're just so misguided. And there's serial killers, and there's, you know, a father and a son that he takes him to a prayer log, and he has all of these animal sacrifices on the prayer log trying to, you know, say prayers that will keep his wife alive, and then he turns to killing a man and sacrificing human blood on it. I mean, and that's the beginning of the book. And then,
that is the first chapter,
yeah,
pretty much, yes.
And then you turn the page and you go to serial killers.
It gets
better. And these are the two. And they're from the area of Knock 'Em Stiff. And, you know, the woman is very gullible. So she goes along with this guy who wants to pick up male hitchhikers.
I want to know why Christopher likes it.
I'll tell you exactly why. As you are describing it absolutely accurately. But listening to the description, if you don't know this writer of this book, you think this has got to be way out there. I was convinced by every word. I believed everything he was writing. I've met him twice. I hardly know the gentleman. I've read the other collection of stories, and it's true for that as well. I was right there in the back seat of that horrible truck that kept breaking down. I was there in the mobile home with the old guy who'd been dead for a few days that people had forgotten about. He is just such a. He grabs you. He grabbed me.
He does. But now, and one of the things I'm wondering, though, is about his platform, you could say. Because with Knock 'Em Stiff, he came out, he was a big media hit because of his story of how he grew up in Knock 'Em Stiff, working at the paper mill, his drinking problem, his, you know, seeing his father retire from the mill and saying there's got to be more than this, loving books, having an imagination, saying to his wife, I'm going to take 5 years and write, see what happens, his story of coming to OSU in the creative writing department. All of that is a media sensation. So everybody knows about him and Knock 'Em Stiff. And I'm wondering, and I don't know, but this question is in my mind, if he did not have that story at all and was living in New York City and wrote this book, would it have the same impact?
I think so.
You do?
That's my
okay.
opinion. That's just an opinion, but okay. I think so.
Well, I did an interview with Don for the Ohio State University Alumni Magazine, and we talked about that sense of place because it was actually about their Appalachian issue, and so I don't think the books could even exist if the story didn't happen almost, and if you weren't from Knock 'Em Stiff, and if you didn't understand those people inside and out. I had actually pitched. I wanted to review the new Don book. For the Plain Dealer, and the editor shot me back an email saying, how could you stand that, you know, collection of short stories? It was so relentless and so bleak and so grim. And I said, because it's fantastical and gothic and macabre and all of that. And I think there's humor in it, just filled throughout
there is,
it.
I thought there was humor in the novel.
I haven't read the novel yet, but yeah.
The setup he gives you about how the people are living and I mean,
it's the preachers.
But his tone is so matter of fact. It's almost like a French novel. I mean, that was the clarity. This is the way it is, and it doesn't occur to him that anybody else would be grossed out or shocked.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So that when you are, it makes the text, I think, all the more powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there was I don't know which men's magazine it was, but it said that every man should read this book. And I thought, I really should have pursued that better. I don't know if I saw it as a publicity blurb or something. And so that's why I thought maybe it's they're chick lit books or, whatever.
That's not this.
No, it's not this at all. But I am wondering if there's something where men resonate more with his work than women do. I mean, for me, I have to step back with Donald Ray Pollack and say, what is the intent of his book? Does it achieve what he sets out to do? So I have to separate myself in my personal reading from it. And in that way, I can see that he is a brilliant writer.
I don't think he sets out to do anything. I think he puts it out there.
Well, exactly.
Really, he puts it out there and says, this is what it is. I don't get the sense, you do in many writers, that they want you to believe something. They want you to interpret it a different, they're trying to control you a bit. I don't find that with him at all.
No, but he's representing a way of life in Southern Ohio that it's kind of like Carolyn Shute with the Beans of Egypt, Maine. She brought to life the Maine existence in the trailers and the extreme poverty. He's bringing to life the people that live in Knockemstiff and the small Ohio towns buried in the South. And I mean, I thought Knockemstiff was brilliant too, but it was hard for me to read.
It is difficult. I mean, it can be. Yeah.
So I can see that he really does. He knows his characters well.
Cassie, does your mother know you're reading?
It's always the quiet ones, always the academics who come in here. Let me remind people, because we have a couple of lines open, 292-8513. If you have a recommendation or if you want to join the conversation about books, we'd love to hear from you. The email is allsides@wosu.org. We're getting a lot of email from people. I have two more I have to read to you for a discussion. This is All Sides Weekend Books with Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Lee Martin. Here's a comment from Jesse, who's been on our Facebook page just now. I just finished Fuzzy Nation by John Scalzi, a remarkably good update of Little Fuzzy by H. Beam Piper. The voice of the main character was particularly interesting, a snarky ex-lawyer with a gold-plated heart. That's intriguing. That's, that's a good recommendation. Also from Nicole on Facebook, she is reading A Clash of Kings, the second novel in an epic fantasy series by American author George R. R. Martin.
I know that my George R. R. Martin friends were really, really salivating to get that.
They were.
The latest book. That's all I know. Well, I haven't read him yet, though.
Well, okay. Well, apparently it's attracting our listeners today. And we have Belinda on the line from Columbus, who's recommending a book called Looking for Alaska. Hi, Belinda.
Hi. I just wanted to see if your guest had read that book by John Green. It was recommended to me by my middle school daughter, who had read two other books by Mr. Green, but was concerned whether this would be objectionable for her since she's in middle school. Apparently it's recommended for high schoolers. I just wanted to see if you all had read that book and if you had an opinion on it. I'll listen and share my thoughts if you desire.
Belinda, Looking for Alaska by John Green. I'm getting shaking heads here. I think that's new to us.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, John Green is an author out of Indiana. My daughter found out about him on a blog that she follows. And he's written two other books that she read. One is called An Abundance of Catherines. The other is something like, I think, Paper City. And she loved them and then asked me to pre-read this one. Looking for Alaska is a story about the high school boy who leaves Florida to a boarding school in Alabama. And, some of the antics that take place, but there's a heavy prevalence of, alcohol use, and then a tragedy that takes place, and it was stirring. I could not put it down and could not get it out of my mind after I finished it.
Belinda, thanks for the recommendation. Give me the title and author one more time.
Looking for Alaska, and the author is John Green.
Belinda, thanks so much for your call. 292-8513. As usual, the calls start stacking up 10 minutes before we go off the air, but that's great. We are delighted to hear from you all, and we have Jeff, who is reading a book called Goose Town. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, yes. It's a wonderful memoir that I read recently. Unfortunately, I can't remember the author's name. I sat next to her all day at the Ohio Anna Book Fair a year ago, and I can't remember her name. But it's her memoir of growing up in the region of, or the portion of Akron known as Goosetown. And I don't know exactly where that was. I don't know my Akron geography well. But it's a lovely, gentle kind of memoir. It sounds like it's significantly different from Knock 'em Stiff. But it really evokes the character of a somewhat faded yet still vital industrial city.
Goosetown, if we can search on the title then, if we don't remember the author. Two words, right? Goosetown?
No, it's one word.
One word, Goosetown. Okay.
It's the sort of nickname or the name of the neighborhood.
Okay,
where
very...
Where she grew up, and she visits with an uncle to see old places where she grew up, and it's really a very nice memoir.
Thanks very much, Jeff, for the recommendation. Goosetown, which is might have even more meaning for people up the Akron way. We've had a very interesting email from Tom. Sorry, every man should not read Donald Ray Pollock's The Devil All the Time. I tried after glowing recommendations from my 82-year-old mother and her 92-year-old neighbor. I couldn't finish it. I just didn't care for the violence, the language. I'm no prude, but I just couldn't do it. I certainly don't want people to think it's representative of those of us who live in Southern Ohio. To be fair, Donald Ray Pollock has said many times that it is not representative of the people who live in Southern Ohio, but I thought that was a very intriguing and timely email. Thank you very much, Tom.
Very much,
Lee.
So.
Are your characters representative of people who grew up in southeastern Illinois? I mean, how do you look at it as an author? I mean, do you think of it in terms of representation, or is it a completely separate world that you've created?
Well, the last three novels that I've written were all based on true stories from that neck of the woods, as we would say there. Of course, I take tremendous liberties with the facts of the stories as I create and invent, but I like to think that the work that I do is in some way a voice from that part of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I was just blogging about this yesterday, as a matter of fact, about how I read yesterday that 16% of the population in this country now live in rural areas.
Wow.
It was interesting. They said in 1910, which was the year my mother was born, I think it was something like 72% of the population. So I started blogging about the disappearing Midwest and how I feel guilty sometimes that I got out, to an urban area, but that I sort of think that the novels that I write are my way of doing my penance for that, and that I hope that they give some sort of voice to that submerged population.
When you are in the process of writing a book that is set in southeastern Illinois, a part of a country that is very dear to you, obviously, is there any self-consciousness on your part as you are working that this might not reflect well or anything like that? Or do you tell the story you have to tell?
No, I'm just trying to tell the story as completely as I can tell it. I don't think any writer can let those sort of editorial voices come into the workroom. So I'm not thinking about how it's going to play in southeastern Illinois when I'm writing it.
Mm-hmm. How does it play, by the way?
I think it plays pretty well.
I think so too.
As things go, yeah.
By the way, the author of Goosetown is Joyce Dyer, D-Y-E-R. She is the author of Goosetown, the memoir of growing up in the Akron area that was just recommended to us. We're getting close to sign off, so I want to give everybody one last chance for recommendations from their stack, starting with Sugar Ray Leonard, Bill Eichenberger.
Well, if I recommend that you don't read this unless you're interested. Well, In a preening egotist, the Sugar Ray book.
He looks
is...
right at me when he says that.
No.
Great. Okay.
You're my favorite peacock, Christopher.
Thank you. Love you for that.
No, really, he's just a self-centered. I mean, it's nothing we didn't know about him already, but you just sort of had hoped. Because he did have an amazing boxing career, especially on that Olympic team from 76 that really is probably the greatest U.S. boxing team ever assembled. But you just don't learn anything. And then, I mean, at one point he's talking about he had, I think, two or three losses total in his professional career. And it turned out that all three, who would have thought, were because his biorhythms were low that day. That's his excuse,
okay.
So
I'm going to use that. It's great. It never occurred to me.
So, but it is called, if anyone does care, The Big Fight. And it's written with Michael Arkush, who should have, I think, led Sugar Ray a little bit, given him a little better advice if you're going to ghostwrite.
Cassie Rose.
I finished a book about a week or so ago called Stories for Nighttime and Some for the Day by Ben Lurie. And these are short stories slash fables slash fairy tales that are so fun to read. They're like about 6 pages each. And what he does is he starts out first 4 or 5 sentences, gives a common situation. A man's walking in the woods and then he meets Bigfoot. Or a guy is a dishwasher in a restaurant and he's washing the dishes and he lifts something out of the rinse water that feels funny. He can't see it and someone comes up and feels it and says, oh, that's a crown. So the guy puts it on his head and he starts to feel pretty good. And another man, he's walking down the street and he's going by the public swimming pool and he stops by, sees a laughing and the splashing, and then he sees a shark. And that story, what he does is it like in that story is he gives the message about our fear, because he starts screaming, shark, shark, nobody else sees it. And then, of course, you know, along the way, he gets the pool closed and it's drained and he suddenly sees that there's no shark there and he doesn't feel any better. And he realizes that he let the monster loose. And so these are the kind, they're great to read out loud. I was sitting on my porch just reading them out loud to myself because they're just, I don't know, they're fun. And so if you're looking for something that's easy to read, pick up and put down, this is a good book. Stories for Nighttime and Some for the Day.
Lee Martin, you're a fine writer and teacher. What are you reading? What do you like to read for yourself?
I read a lot of student work, and I read novels and short stories and essays and memoirs.
And the weekly newspaper from back in Southeast Illinois, right?
Do you really? Yeah, I still read my hometown newspaper online.
Absolutely. Yeah. One book that's out this summer that I really recommend is Stuart Onan's novel Emily Alone.
Yep.
A novel set in Pittsburgh from the point of view of an 80-some-year-old woman. And one of the things I really enjoy about the book is that we don't get a lot of fiction, unfortunately, from our senior citizens. Not that Stuart is a senior citizen, but featuring
from that
senior
point of
citizens.
View, right?
And he does so in a way that avoids the sentimental, which I think is a real victory.
Although I kept being afraid something terrible was going to happen to her. And I won't give it away, but I mean, he hooked me that way.
Yeah.
I thought, please, oh, please, I couldn't handle this. You know? Stuart Onan is a fascinating writer.
He'll be with us at Ohio State next year.
Great.
Teaching a week-long workshop for our students.
Oh, terrific. Wow. Yeah, Stuart Onan. There was another book that he wrote about a kind of a hapless young girl who got in with a bad boyfriend and they got involved in a terrible murder and she was executed for that. And her whole tone, she's writing this book in her cell as she's waiting to be taken to the execution room. And it's not depressing and it's not horrible at all, but it's just very, I mean, it's I hate to say it's an easy read, but it was, you know. And they kept saying it's time to go, and she's going, coming, and she's running, yeah, I'm coming.
Be there in a minute,
yes. Last 2 minutes, what's on your reading tables that you didn't bring today, Bill Eichenberger?
I'm not even sure.
Okay.
I don't know.
You don't know?
No. I'm not sure what's next.
Everybody, call up Bill Eichenberger and offer him a reviewing gig, and then he'll read for you. How's that?
That's right.
Cassie Rose, what's on your table? You're looking on. What's on the floor?
It's what's on the floor. I think I put it in here. It's this book it's a Swedish crime writer that I'm really excited. Karen Alvtegen. And this book called Shadow that she is reading, everything that I've been reading about it is that, you know, it's one of those you just can't put down, people stayed up all night, on and on. Now, she has several of her books that are published in the U.S. I'm not sure this one is. I read about it a lot in some of the London papers and ordered it from the London Review of Books. Paid a little pretty penny for it, even though it's paperback. But it was kind of exciting.
Well, that boat ride jacks up the price.
Really, coming from the Royal Mail. But this is on, and I'm thinking, I'm really excited to read this. It's called Shadow, Karen Alvtegen. And I think there are a lot of her books that are already published in the U.S., and so she might be a new crime writer.
Okay, and I'll give mine away. On my book table is Tom Jones. I have never read Tom Jones by Henry Fielding, and I'm told it's the original 18th century dirty book, so I'm looking forward to Tom Jones. But maybe next time we'll give a review of this 300-year-old novel written in the time of Handel, which I think is kind of wonderful. I'm Christopher Purdy. I do want to thank my panel today for joining us for All Sides Weekend Books. If we didn't get to your call, I'm sorry. Thank you for the emails. Don't forget to visit our Facebook page as well. Keep reading, keep thinking about, make notes. Let us know what you're reading when we do the show again. Thank you very much, Bill Eichenberger, Cassie Rose, and Lee Martin. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.